This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of The Overcomers, God's Vision for You to Thrive in an Age of Anxiety and Outrage, written and narrated by pastor and best-selling author Matt Chandler, and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold. This episode is brought to you in part by Richmond Graduate University. The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly. Richmond Graduate University can equip you to become a licensed professional counselor, integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmond.edu.
That said, Mr. President, let me now turn to my second purpose here today.
This is an actor reading from a speech given on February 28, 1978. The original speaker was a Democratic senator from New Hampshire named Thomas McIntyre. By the way, welcome to the Truce Podcast, and I know this probably sounds stuffy and a crazy way to start a season. Where's the action, the drama, the condemnation of an enemy? No, my friends. This is a great speech.
Mr. President, I believe the techniques used to exploit the issue of the canal treaties are the most compelling evidence to date that an ominous change is taking place in the very character and direction of American politics.
He's in front of the Senate talking about the Panama Canal, one of the most important man-made waterways in the world. It's about 40 miles long, traveling southeast across Panama. In debate after debate, the Senate wrestled with President Carter's plan to give the land to the Panamanian people. As you may remember from high school history class, the U.S. has been involved with the canal since 1902 with the passage of the Spooner Act. Originally, a French company tried to build there and 20,000 people died, mostly from yellow fever and malaria. By the way, notice here that the U.S. takes over for French imperialism gone awry. The same will be true when we cover the Vietnam War. The French gave up, so the Americans wanted a shot, guys like Teddy Roosevelt. There's just one problem. They couldn't get a treaty with Colombia, who, at the time, controlled the land. So they did what would become the de facto plan in South America. The U.S. backed a revolution. And guess what? The new government of Panama was far more receptive. Even more lives were lost to disease, dynamite accidents, and mudslides. But the canal was ours. A treaty provision allowed the U.S. to act as it wished within a 10-mile zone of the canal, essentially giving the U.S. a foreign colony. That is what was up for debate in 1978. Should the United States return the land to the people? Or as then-candidate for the Republican nomination, Ronald Reagan said, "We built it, we paid for it, it's ours." But this speech by Senator McIntyre is about a lot more than what to do with a canal. It's about the state of politics in the U.S.
But whatever the cause, Mr. President, I see abundant evidence that these dangerously passionate certainties are being cynically fomented, manipulated, and targeted in ways that threaten amity, unity, and the purposeful course of government, in order to advance a radical ideology that is alien to mainstream political thought.
In other words, the U.S. and the debates over the treaty were becoming more polarized. The radicals involved were unwilling to work together with anyone else, even within their own parties.
As a result, the traditional role of the parties is slowly being usurped by 1,001 passionately committed special interests, splinter faction, and single-issue constituencies.
What's more, the splinter groups were mobilized, using cutting-edge technology to go around traditional forms of communication.
My colleagues know what I'm talking about. They know, as I know, that on any given issue, someone, somewhere, can depress a computer key, and within hours or a few days at the most, we are inundated with mimeographed postcards and custom-tailored letters and telegrams that vary scarcely a comma in the message they deliver.
If a member of Congress took a misstep or followed the party line instead of the opinion of these factions, their offices, those of the media, and other members of Congress were flooded with pre-printed letters demanding that they change their mind. These were not handwritten notes thoughtfully penned and then sent by individuals. No. These letters were sent to constituents through mass mailings. Then those people would sign their names and send them out, often without so much as an added comment. It was bulk mail as a weapon. And it was taking over Congress. And some of it was in the name of Jesus. Welcome to Season 6. This season, we're taking a deep dive into one big question. How did evangelical Christians in the United States get associated with the Republican Party? It's a big story, full of surprises, interesting characters, dynamite, war, money, sexual revolution, righteous indignation, and corruption from all sides. Together, we'll track how the GOP changed from the 1950s through the 1990s, shifting from the party of Eisenhower to that of Ronald Reagan. How factions of Protestantism, who rarely worked together, often found unity in common enemies, then invited Mormons, Catholics, and Jews to join them. This podcast is nonpartisan. Last season, I covered the Democratic Party and the rise of fundamentalism, especially in regards to their complicity with Jim Crow laws. Now we're pivoting to follow the Republicans. I'm not here to pick winners and losers. And instead of summarizing a world of movements and characters in 1 hour and then hiding behind application points, we're going to take our time. Our goal is to understand how we got to today, where so many evangelical Christians live in a state of constant fear and anger. And we're going to talk about whether or not that's what we want and what we can do about it. I'll be your tour guide. I've produced this show for almost 6 years. I'm an evangelical Christian who directed 2 gospel films, wrote evangelistic novels, and has taught Sunday school. Now I'm on the hunt for the story of my people. How did we get here, and how can we get back to doing the work of the gospel? Let's find out together. You're listening to the show that uses journalistic tools to look inside the Christian church. We press pause on the culture wars in order to explore how we got here and how we can do better. I'm Chris Starin, and this is Truce.
God is a genius storyteller, and the evidence of this is threaded throughout Scripture. In Christianity Today's new show, Holy Curiosity, with me, Kat Armstrong, we explore storied connections threaded throughout Scripture from the Old Testament to the New. Our first mini-series, Connecting Dinah and the Woman at the Well, welcomes experts like Drs. Tim Mackey and Diane Landberg to give us insight and context into the physical location and meaning of these two stories. These stories will spark holy curiosity in your own faith, because once you see these connections, you can't unsee them. God wastes no person, place, or thing. Listen and subscribe to Holy Curiosity with Kat Armstrong on your favorite podcast platform.
McIntyre's speech was just heating up. His seat in the Senate had recently come under fire. His challenger, an airline pilot named Gordon Humphrey, announced his candidacy just 2 days earlier and would soon win, not just on his own merits. Humphrey was backed by a new kind of political machine.
By proceeding from the flawed premise that all of us are alike, it is easy for ideologues to conclude that we must see every issue as they see it, unless there is something sinister in our motivation. And they proceed from that premise, Mr. President, with an arrogance born of the conviction that they, and they alone, have a corner on patriotism, morality, and God's own truths. That their values and standards and viewpoints are so unassailable, they justify any means, however coarse and brutish, of imposing them on others.
The parties were radicalizing, not working together. They hunkered down and marketed each other not as those who disagree, but as devils out to destroy the country.
Now, I want to be fair about this, Mr. President. In the particular instance of the Canal Treaties, I am talking about the kind of politics practiced by what has come to be known as the New Right. But I want to note that the record of extremists on the ideological left bears a remarkable and regrettable similarity.
In this speech, he's going to hone in on the New Right. In another year, he'd co-author a book on the subject called The Fear Brokers. Okay, so who was the New Right? This cabal started as a small group, so tiny you could fit it into a single living room. Their ideas were radical, based on a mishmash of teachings mixed with dramatic tax cuts. They wanted to dismantle the American government, institutions like public schools and aid for the poor, boost the military, undo the liberalism of the 1960s. And yes, those on the left picked up on some of their tactics. McIntyre was there to put into the public record the nastiness of the New Right.
Last summer, the national director of the Conservative Caucus, Howard Phillips,
one of the founders of the New Right,
said conservatives should make, quote, a political sitting duck of Tom McIntyre over the canal treaties and that the Conservative caucus could, and I quote, make it a political impossibility for McIntyre to vote for that treaty.
This was before McIntyre even knew which way he was going to vote. Howard Phillips and the New Right decided they would force his hand. Their people censured McIntyre, alleging he was helping the communists if he voted to hand the canal to the people of Panama.
Hear, if you will, the revealing words of Howard Phillips on other occasions. Quote, "We organize discontent. We must prove our ability to get revenge on people who go against us. We'll be after them if they vote the wrong way. We're not going to stop after the vote's passed." And I hear the words of another spokesman for the New Right, Paul Weyrich, director of the Committee for the Survival of a Free Congress. Quote, "We are different from previous generations of conservatives. We are no longer working to preserve the status quo. We are radicals working to overturn the present power structure of this country. Mr. President, these people are different from traditional conservatives. I know the traditional conservatives of my own state. I have competed with them in the political arena. I have worked with them in behalf of our state. They are people of honor, civility, and decency. The New Right cannot comprehend how people of opposing viewpoints can find common ground and work together. For them, there is no common ground. And this, in my judgment, is the best indication of what they truly are. Radicals, whose aim is not to compete with honor and decency, not to compromise when necessary to advance the common good, but to annihilate those they see as enemies."
This movement, the New Right, would revive a failing political party by radicalizing it. They did so with the backing of big business and the help of direct mailings targeted at people most receptive, then used the money they raised to back their kind of candidates. They smeared anyone who got in their way. McIntyre was not the only representative harassed by the New Right. The same was true for others, like Mark Hatfield, a Republican from Oregon, who spoke later.
"I have a few letters with me today which are replete with phrases like, 'A vote for support of the treaty is an act of treason. You are a traitor for having indicated your support of the treaty. You are not an American.'"
Others use anti-Semitic language that I won't repeat here. Hatfield continues.
"The second thing these individuals do is baptize their position with religious nomenclature. I have letters here. Quote, 'I thought you were a born-again Christian. Now I know you are not because you support the treaty.' They do not bother to ask my view of Jesus Christ in an effort to reach some determination of my salvation. Instead, they chose to make a judgment on my religious salvation on the basis of my position regarding the Panama Canal Treaty."
Imagine that. Having your faith questioned not based on your relationship with Jesus, the Gospels, salvation, your morality, whether or not your faith bears fruit, or if you dedicated your life to Christ, but on your opinions about the Panama Canal. The Panama Canal. This gets to the heart of what we're talking about this season. We're going to cover a lot of ground, go deep into the belly of the beast. There may be times when you wonder why we're covering the International Woman's Year, or supply-side economics, textbooks, public education, or televangelists. It's because it all ties back into what we've heard in this speech. Each of these pieces takes us one step closer to understanding this movement that lumps Jesus with national defense, low taxes, corporate gains, the Republican Party, and the New Right. Before we do, I want to ask you a big question, and have this question in the front of your mind every time we get to a big issue this season. Okay, here it is. What do we mean when we call something Christian or biblical? Those terms get thrown around a lot, like all the time, to the point of Congressman Hatfield having to wrestle with it on the Senate floor. But what do we mean by it? Does something have to be explicitly discussed in the Bible to be biblical? So let's use that test. Is voting for the Panama Canal to be returned to the people of Panama explicitly mentioned in the Bible? Now, I've read it multiple times. Panama is never even mentioned. So the issue fails the explicit test. Perhaps when someone says that something is biblical, they mean they're applying existing biblical principles. Does the Bible have anything to say about handing a canal over to another nation? No. How about peaceably transferring land from one country to another? Not really. Imperialism? Not a lot. So what basis did the radicals of the 1970s have when questioning the actions of senators involved in the Panama Canal Treaty? It doesn't seem to have been the Bible. Perhaps instead, they allowed themselves to get caught up in the propaganda of the new right to the point where they couldn't tell where the Bible ended and their politics began. We're going to see that a lot this season. And if you're paying attention, it's going to happen to you. The goal here isn't to make us feel better. It's to understand what happened. Maybe not the best way to build an audience for a podcast, but it's what we need to do. As per usual, I'm not going to give you easy answers. I want you to think for yourself. As we continue and evangelicals, my people, make claims that something is or isn't biblical, ask yourself what they mean. Because we humans are fallible. We tend to bundle everything we like together in one bunch. Here's a lighter example I've used on the show before. I once had a former roommate make the case that CrossFit is biblical. Not exercise or maintaining your body as God's temple. CrossFit in particular is biblical. Does the Bible say that CrossFit is God's exercise plan? No. Does that mean CrossFit is evil? No. The Bible literally has nothing to say about CrossFit. Nothing. What I think happened is that since my roommate liked it and he was a Christian, he subconsciously made a connection. Since he, as a believer, liked CrossFit, and I think his workout leader was involved in his church, it must be biblical. That sounds funny, but we do this all the time. That's what that writer did when they questioned Hatfield's decision on the Panama Canal. They took their opinions as a Christian and assumed that anyone who disagreed with them was not a Christian, based not on the Bible, but on their politics. Some of what we cover this season is explicitly laid out in the Bible. A lot of it is not. So when we get to big issues, stop and ask yourself, were the actions of the evangelicals in the 1970s and 80s appropriate? What should they have done? Now, we too are living in confusing times. What can we learn from the mistakes and triumphs of this era? How was fear used to manipulate people? Were the threats real or imagined? There will be both. Is it possible that we, conservative, liberal, or centrist, American or otherwise, Christian or not, are being manipulated by our fears for the financial and political gain of just a few? Will we understand that a Christian is a person who follows Christ, or will we narrow it down to the fate of a 40-mile waterway in Central America? That's this season on the Truce podcast. Truce is a long-form journalism show where, frequently, I pick one big story and dive deep to uncover the truths about some aspect of Christianity. The goal? Point us back to the simple work of the gospel. Love our neighbors and love God. Many of us have never examined the things that cling to our beliefs, the barnacles on the boat, as it were. Together, we're going to explore how the support of one political party in the United States has affected us. Always asking, is this who Jesus calls us to be? If so, great. If not, how can we make the necessary changes before these barnacles damage our testimony to the world? I hope you'll join us. Thanks so much for listening. From here on out, God willing, I'll be releasing new episodes every 2 weeks with some breaks for holidays. If you're new to the show, welcome. Please like and subscribe so you get every new episode as it's released. Also, you'll notice that I ask for financial help at the end of most episodes. Money requests make some of us uneasy. This is not about greed. It's my hope to do this show full-time, which would mean more episodes for you, and a healthier work-life balance for me. Right now, I'm doing this show while also holding down a full-time job driving a school bus. There is no obligation to give, and nobody is getting rich on Truce. I just need to keep the lights on in my apartment like everybody else. For those who want to help, visit trucepodcast.com/donate to learn about ways to give on Patreon, Venmo, by check, or PayPal. On the site, you can also find sources for most episodes if you want to go deeper on your own. I first heard about these speeches from the book Reaganland by Rick Perlstein. He'll be a guest later this season. And I'll have links to the entire text of the speeches if you want to read them for yourself on Google Books. Thanks to my friend Chris Sloan for loaning me his voice for this episode. Truce is a production of Truce Media LLC. And God willing, we'll talk again soon. I'm Chris Sterin, and this is Truce.
This episode was brought to you in part by the Lord of Spirits podcast. Many Christians yearn to break free of the influence of secular materialism and to understand the union of the seen and unseen worlds as made by God. What is the spiritual world like? Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.